Okay, everyone, do your intro.
Hi, I'm Gerard Di Peralta. That was terrible.
We're off to a great start.
Hi, I'm Gerard Di Peralta.
And I'm Kevin Peterson.
And I'm Ryan Benoit. And this is Serial Podcast 9, Version 2, Episode
2.
102.
2-2.
Great.
Can't lose on 22s.
Did you make that up or did you get that from somewhere?
Nah, it's a rap lyric. From the rapists.
Hey, how are you two doing?
Great.
It's a snowy, cold Wednesday here in Vancouver.
Yo, first off, if anybody is using Riverside and using the Camo app with your iPhone, which worked amazing last time, just beautiful. That's why the last video looked so good. And this one is with a regular, you know, half decent quality webcam. Anybody can tell us why all of a sudden the Camo app doesn't connect?
Just to chime in here, I am actually using Riverside with the Camo app and seems to be working on my... No, I don't know. This is really riveting.
It worked great for 2 or 3 weeks and then it just stopped working. So
things that are still working on, like Gerard's setup, is us. And we have a topic tonight. So tonight, we are going to discuss the top 10 best Toyotas of all time.
Cars.
Asterisk. Cars. Yeah. It was my responsibility to plan this episode, and I decided, much to the chagrin, is that the right word? I don't know, that we would not include trucks or SUVs. I really want to get into the weeds on the best Toyotas.
It was interesting because I did sort of poo-poo the idea. And then when I was thinking about it a bit, I was like, actually, there's like a ton of cars. There's a ton of Toyota cars that I feel are like the best or like influential or crazy or like, you know.
Gerard, how did you feel about it?
Felt fine. Not that some of these are going to be like the greatest Toyotas of all time, but some of them are.
Okay, so before we start, I want to just explain to everyone listening how we approached this, because best can be kind of subjective. This is how we went about it. So we defined it as important. So a car of significant value or importance that has a profound impact on Toyota's success or automotive history. Influential. A vehicle that has had a strong effect on the automotive industry, shaping trends, technologies, or car culture. This includes the impact on design, engineering, or the broader automotive landscape. And finally,
this is when you start playing the do 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 do
do do do do do. Are we gonna have like a structured debate? Do we need to lay out all the ground rules here?
Yeah, we do.
How about this? Which Toyotas do you guys think are dope? And why?
And why? Yeah. There we go.
Hey, you two dummies, listen to me right now. The last time we did this.
So the cultural influence of the A86 is a...
I'm just going to wait till you're done, and then I'm going to finish, because that's what we're doing.
We're just making the podcast better here, buddy. Okay.
So the last time... Yeah. Great. Great. When we did this conversation the last time, we stopped halfway through, and we said, actually, I don't think we defined what any of this meant, and it didn't mean anything. So now we're defining it. So that
you can define it, just don't put us to sleep or the listeners to sleep.
Holy shit, guy. It's like a 20-second bit. And you've wasted more time getting upset about it. Okay. Finally, cultural impact. A car that has left a lasting impression on society, whether through pop culture, global appeal, or how it has shaped social values, behaviors, or identities.
So like a classic?
Yeah, or like a car that's been in a video game or movies or, you know, like that's a cultural impact.
You should just say it like that. Yeah, number one car, Toyota Corolla wagon, four-wheel drive, whatever that thing is. What is that thing? Is it a Corolla? No, yeah. It's a Tercel.
There's a Tercel.
Tercel
you wagon, know there's a structure to drive. This.
Yep.
Is there?
Because it's really good in the snow.
I mean, that's probably a great all-around vehicle.
Hang on. Can I just lay out the rest? There's one more ground thing that I want to lay out.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Oh, okay. We jumped the gun here. We're running the race. We don't even...
Okay.
The last thing was I had originally asked everyone to make their own top 10 list, and then we would bring it. Each person would go through their list, and then from there we would dissect.
I might have missed that.
I figured you would. I'm not surprised. But if anyone at home is like, right, oh, here, why is this have so much more structure? It's because when we talk about the podcast, when it's not recording, we're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had more structure? And I took the initiative to try to make us have more structure, and I immediately regret my choice.
I asked him to put the structure in. We asked him to put the structure in just so we can fuck with him.
Yeah. Hey, I want you to do some work that's a big waste of your time. Okay.
No, it's good work. It's good work. But we just have to look like we didn't do it.
Yeah.
I thought you just ChatGPT'd the whole thing, no?
I honestly didn't. I wrote it and then I ran it that's through ChatGPT. That's why it's oh, okay. Real oh, fucking relax. I'm
just kidding. All right, let's just close this whole thing.
The AI okay, so that I ran it through after told me, hey, this is pretty good. We just cleaned it up a little bit. So suck on that. You fucking love AI, Jerry.
Okay, so how do we start? What's the top? Do we start at number 10?
Yes, number 10. You guys, I'll ask.
Do we each say 10 and then we go each say 9? How does
dealer's
that work?
Choice because
tell me about the structure.
Do we discuss? Is it a
consensus?
Collective list?
You guys can weigh in. I thought it would just be easier if each person went through their list. And then at the end, we're like, okay, that's kind of what we're working with. And then
do you have a
we.
List, Kevin?
I wrote down some cars.
And then. So, he has a list of cars. So Kevin did homework.
I have a list of cars, but.
I like how hard you're trying to not sewer Gerard on this right now.
I will say this though. I compiled my list 10 minutes before we started this.
That's all I ask. So I guess, okay. Do you want to do it number by number?
Well, how about like, since Gerard doesn't really have it, I'll just go through mine maybe.
Yeah. And I'll just figure it out.
And then because I'm sure there's a bunch on here that Gerard would say, but you know what I mean?
You do yours, I'll do mine, then Jerry can cobble his together.
I want to say no particular order, but...
Oh, okay. You do yours that way, then.
I don't know that, like, I feel like they came to me in this order as
a
well.
A dream.
You know what I mean?
Okay, so, I'm done.
Yeah.
I have a list and all the reasons why these cars are good.
Of course,
go on. Anyways. All right.
A86. Feels like I don't really need to, like, you know, we could go into that later. LFA. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing. GT4 Celica. A80 Supra. 2000 GT. Mm-hmm. UCF 10 LS400. Camry. Like across the generations. Corolla. Not specifically the A86, also sort of across the generations. And that was my, like, list of ones that I was, like, pretty happy with. And then I have a bunch of sort of other ones that are, like, cool, but, like, I don't really know that they're, like, revolutionary or whatever in any way.
Well, so. Hey, that's pretty good because I made my list, and I'll go through my list for you now. And I did it properly, but that's fine. No. So at number 10, I had a 1997 Toyota Camry V6 LE.
Why LE? Why so specific?
Why not, Jerry? Why fucking not? But I have reasons
why. Well, V6
why
is good enough. Any yeah. V6, but what's specific about the LE that you...
Because I want that leather, buddy.
I want that trim, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm being overly specific. And I had reasons for it, but if we don't agree with it, we can discuss it later. Number 9 was like one where I had a few. I was going to leave it blank because honestly, I felt like you guys were going to force a car in there that I don't necessarily agree with. So I wrote it down, and then I have reasons of why I believe the car maybe doesn't belong on the list. We can discuss it later. And I also chose the Celica GT4, the ST185.
Yep.
But I did have a thought of putting a Prius in there just because it was the first, like, kind of mainstay EV car, very, or not EV, but hybrid car, very popular
Yeah.
But anyway, but then I was like, ah, fuck it. It doesn't have a cool livery. Like the route, the WRC Celica, whatever we call it. Okay. At 8, I have the LS400. Same one Kevin chose. At 7, I have the GT86 BRZ FRS. At 6, I have the ISF. At 5, I have the JZX100. At 4, the AE86. At 3, the same Supra that Kevin chose. And then at 2, I put the LFA. And at 1, I put the 2000 GT.
You put 2000 GT as number one?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy. It's a bit crazy to me, too.
Like, I think it's a good car, but yeah, okay.
Are there any cars that we didn't mention that Gerard, you feel should be on that list?
I have a list, but I did actually punch that into ChatGPT, and I was like, yo, what are the 10 most influential cars, blah, 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 remove trucks, add Lexus derivatives. And one thing it did mention that I thought was kind of interesting was the MR2. And while I don't really think the MR2 is like super cool, but it is, you know, Japan's first mid-engine sports car. I didn't know that. Rivaling Ferrari in handling. And it's kind of like one of those things where it's like the NSX almost, like cool car, but like, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I don't particularly like MR2s, but yeah, that was interesting.
Not as cool as the NSX myself, in my opinion.
It did say the IS300 here as well. Japan's answer to the BMW 3 Series. Whatever. But it did mention the Prius, because the Prius was why it's iconic. The car that made hybrids mainstream. And I'd probably go out of these three cars, I'd probably put the Prius at the highest, you know, if it were to enter my 10 list. Because the Prius was like literally the beginning of the entire hybrid fuel economy revolution. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the Camry. It's been just like the mainstay of that. And it's like, while every other manufacturer is playing catch up and learning technology and stuff, Toyota's just steadfastly been fucking pumping out Priuses for the past like 2 decades or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, the Prius is almost like a category killer too, like Kleenex. Yeah. It's just like,
yeah,
like it just is like synonymous with an electric car. You just like, you know what I mean?
But it's not electric, but yeah, like, yeah, yeah. But also, yeah, like at one point, every taxi, every whatever was a Prius. And like, that's a pretty significant thing. And while it's not like a performance, you know, like we're kind of talking about performance, but we are talking about impact. And like you put the Camry on the list, and like, I 100% agree with that, because the Camry is kind of just like, it's like a blueprint on how to make a good ass car. Every manufacturer in the world can just look at a Camry and be like, it's nothing special, but it's the best. You know what I mean? Like, if every manufacturer could make a Camry, they'd be...
You want to hear something interesting about the Camry?
Mm.
In US, Camry was the number one selling car in 97 and in 98 and in 99 and in 2000. It missed out to the Accord in 2001, but came back in 2002 and then did it for 18 years in a row.
Exactly. Exactly. Every
18 years in a row from 2007 on, Camry was the best selling car in America.
So I put 97.
Exactly.
Yeah, I put 97 because it was the first year it became like the peak. That was like the first time it became the top selling sedan.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll give you guys my list, but I'm not gonna like put it really in order.
Okay, I would expect nothing less. Go on.
Well, I mean, I'll probably put it.
Well,
in
I mean,
order
I,
later,
well, but... we're gonna come to an order together, aren't we? Because mine wasn't in order.
Oh, hang on. Whoa, you mine can all shit on either. Ryan all you want, and then Ryan shits on someone. And we gotta pump the brakes. Fuck you. Hit me with a list.
Okay, 100% LS400. LS400 was like a game changer. Same sort of thing as the Camry. It's the blueprint for a reliable luxury car. Like, you know, there's BMWs, there's Mercedes and all this other stuff. And, you know, they're expensive and they're fancy. And then Lexus was like, oh, that's nice. We can do that too. Except we're just going to make it actually good and actually reliable. And we're going to make it cost less because we're just really good at building stuff for like less money. And so anyways, yeah, I think that's why the LS400 is great. 100% AE86. I don't even think that has to be, I mean, we can discuss it, but I mean, like, yeah, there are so many reasons why the AE86 is probably the most influential Toyota, not of all time, but like in certain circles, that's the king. You know what I mean? A80 Supra for sure. Same thing. It's like every sort of like JDM cars enthusiast wet dream at one point next to the GTR. I don't think it's the same regard as like a 34 GTR or even a 30, you know, any GTR, but like in America, it was like a top car. Definitely going to say the JZX series could be the 90, the 100. Probably I'd combine those two into one. The JZX is for sure in my books are like, you know, kind of like the groundbreaking rear-wheel drive sedan king of drift cars. I'm going to say the A90 Supra because that car I know it's like a bit diluted because it's with BMW, but like it put Toyota and Supra back on the map, and it did it in like a really good way. And I know that it had the help of BMW. Honestly, it probably was more to do with BMW than Toyota. However, it still carries a Toyota name and it still flies the Supra flag. So, you know, it sort of brought that back. What am I at? 4 or 5? I don't know. What's another one? I'm going to say the Prius. Prius was like a game changer for sure. I don't know. Where are we at? How many is that?
I don't know. That's why I asked you to do your homework.
I don't know. I thought you had a list.
I don't know. That's my list. What did I forget? I think the ST-185 is a good mention. I'm probably not going to put that on my list. Oh, yeah. I'm going to say the LFA and the 2000. Those are all good. Yeah, LFA, the 2000 GT for sure. And then you said ISF. I'm probably not going to say ISF.
I'll throw out some ones here that like, so one that I was kind of like, this one is pretty sick is the GR Yaris. As in terms of like newer cars, like that's a pretty like 1.6 liter, 300 horsepower, like inline three. It's like a pretty crazy car. I did put the GR86 there as well as like not quite there on my list, where you know, or the FRS, like you know, like it didn't quite cut it for me. The LC500, same thing. I don't know that it really cuts it for me. The Century, you know, how many cars come with a V12, but same thing. Like I don't know that really cut it for me.
I was gonna say the Toyota Crown series because it is a very long.
It's very long running.
It's probably has the longest lineage of shit. Like, I want to say like almost any manufacturer. I think the Crown even come out, man? Like the '50s or something.
It came out in 1955. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that like,
but like when the 911 come out, probably has, I think
later than that.
Really?
Yeah. Cause it was like a 356 and then all that other shit. But I mean, yeah, 911 is just like an iconic car period.
Yeah. Yeah, just like consistently manufactured car for 50 plus years.
Yeah, the only thing about the Crown is like, yeah, that's like cool, but like kind of who gives a fuck?
You know I mean? Guess it's been 70 years now.
Know what I mean?
And if I were to actually ask you to like narrow into it, could you pick?
17 Crown. It's the only one. 17. It's the only one.
I can't remember. Did it ever come manual or you always had to swap it?
Never.
So you always had to, so in stock form,
nothing
does
special.
That car, yeah. I don't know if that car has the same like cultural touch points or impact as any, you know, like if you were to choose a rear wheel drive like JDM car, it's a 100 or a 90.
I would probably choose the ST-205 or the SW20 over the Crown personally, because I think like the MR2, even though I don't really like them, it is definitely like kind of like an influential or like was a significant car for Toyota. But the ST was kind of one of the only cars that they raced that was like actually kind of sick.
Yo man, they had a NASCAR. I mean, that's kind
of Camry. Cool. Camry beats all those though, to be honest. Like Camry's like just Camry
is number one.
Yeah.
No.
He's the NASCAR buddy.
Yeah. And anybody that disagrees with the Camry being on the top 10 list can go fuck themselves. And they've never had a Camry. So go get yourself a Camry and drive it relentlessly. Treat it like absolute garbage for, I mean, how long did we have that car? Like fucking 10 years or something?
It's so silly.
Yeah. Just go and beat the living shit out of a Camry for 10 years and then tell me how it's not a good car.
All right. So what's number one?
You want to start at number one, or why don't we start at number 10?
I feel like
number one's easier to start.
Yeah, number one would be easier.
Okay.
It's probably only between like three or four cars.
It's between three cars myself. Yeah. The A86. Yeah. The LFA.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm still going to go with the 2000 GT. I'm going to put that in and I'll tell you why, but I'll wait my turn.
And my third one would be the
Toyota Sierra.
No, the Supra. The A80 Mark IV Supra,
Supra?
Do I need to sell you on the LFA?
No.
Gerard didn't really seem super committed.
That's my fucking number two, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the LFA is significant. It's just the problem with the LFA is that it's so... It's kind of like the 2000 GT. It's like, it's significant because it's significant, but it's not attainable, so it's kind of not irrelevant, but like, nobody got to experience LFAs. Nobody got to experience to the 2000.
I know, and I think that's. But I mean, like, it's the complete opposite side to the Camry. The Camry is literally nothing special, you know, really. But everybody got to experience, and that's why it's on the list. And the LFA is the opposite. It's something very special, but very few people got to experience it.
But is the 2000 GT even more so than that? Because it feels like even fewer people get to experience or got to experience the 2000 GT.
For me, the reason the 2000 GT doesn't take that spot is because if you were to talk to 100 enthusiasts that may or may not be into Toyotas, half of them might not even know what a 2000 GT is.
Why don't we tell them? Why don't we say what it is? What is it?
It's a mid-engine sports car.
I will make my case for the 2000 GT to be number one. So, in many ways, it puts Japanese cars on the map. That is like globally, it's like one of the first major sports cars to come out of Japan.
Bond car?
Yeah. And 1967, Road and Track praised the car as one of the most enjoyable and exciting cars they've ever driven. It's arguably one of the most expensive Toyotas you can try to acquire to this day, most rare. And the reason I actually put it for number one is because it is the successor or the predecessor to everything that we hold dear about Toyota. So it is the first time that Toyota collaborated with Yamaha. That car was nearly like a lot of the build and everything to do with it was because of Yamaha. So that is the foundation for the relationship going forward that brings us the things that we love, the JZ engines, all the LFA, you know, all of those cars kind of like that is the genesis of it. An interesting fact also is that Yamaha almost built this car with Nissan. So like, imagine that. Imagine if Toyota just didn't have Yamaha engines and Nissans had them. Like what a world. We wouldn't have a podcast. Like without that car, I think none of the things that go on this list exist. That we like, I don't think we would be doing this podcast without the car. That's some crazy butterfly effect, but I'm just saying.
All right, I hear what you're saying. And like, I don't disagree with a bunch of those points. That's why it was on my list as well. I just don't really think that it's number one material.
All right.
Yeah, and I don't think culturally, because for me, culturally is sort of the sphere that we live in and have lived in for the past, let's say, 10 to 20 years.
Sure.
And maybe moving forward. And I get that the sphere exists because of the Toyota 2000 GT. But like I said, if you were to ask enthusiasts today, they may or may not even know what that is. And I agree that it's important. Just don't agree that it's culturally significant in our... So maybe that's why I shouldn't be
number one. What's the highest you would put it, Gerard? Maybe that's a better question.
What's our?
I don't think we have anything concreted in yet.
Okay, so the other contender for number one is A86, and what was the other one? A80 Supra. The A80 Supra is not beating the Toyota 2000 GT in my books. Like, I like the A80, and I do think it's culturally significant, but I don't think it's iconic in the grand scheme of Toyota. So what was the other one besides the E86?
LFA, yeah.
I mean, those two cars are basically kind of the same thing, the LFA and the 2000 GT. The LFA might as well just be like kind of the newer version. It's almost like Lexus was like, hey, just so you guys know, we can still do this shit. We don't really do it, but we can still.
I almost feel that the LFA, though, has more cultural significance. So, like, thus it has to be higher than, you know?
I don't really care for LFAs personally, but, like,
take yourself out of your body.
I just don't know, like, what's, like, okay, tell me more about the LFA. I think it's like, it sounds great, and it was like, okay, like
it was like full, they started building it, and then it was aluminum with carbon fiber, and then hike most of the way through they were like, no, you know, this car has to be true carbon fiber, so they like restarted from the beginning.
So is it a supercar? Obviously it's a supercar.
Yeah, it's a supercar. NA V10.
But does it have good performance?
Like blisteringly fast or whatever?
Is it significant in the grand scheme of supercars?
I believe it is. I mean, that's not the rule that like the world I like live in though. You know what I mean? Like versus the 458, like, you know, or.
That's kind of what I mean. It's like if you're going to buy a supercar, like do any of these supercar buyers give a fuck about LFAs? Like besides like Toyota nerds.
But I mean, we're kind of making this for Toyota nerds. The thing that I know about the LFA is that if it would have come out a few years earlier, it would have probably been a little bit more game changing. But what they said was because they were so finicky with the car, by the time it came out, it was kind of almost table stakes. Yeah, it was like what everybody else had already done. Like when they were doing it, it was like a little bit like ahead of the game, but it took them so long to build it that it timed itself out. I'm going to say right now, I don't think the 86 belongs at the top of the list. That's a controversial thing, but that's not a number one car for me. It's cool. It maybe top three, I would consider it.
Support your answers. Support your answers, please, sir.
Let me just say one more thing, though. Ryan's never had an 86.
You're right, I haven't. And that's why.
That might be a reason why.
No, but I think when you look at the... if you were listening when instead of making fun of me when I laid out all the rules, I think that a lot of people, a random person on the street, if you were to be like, yo, an 86 even versus the Supra carries way more weight. Like the Supra, I bet more people, casual car fans, can tell you what engine came in the Supra. They'd probably have a harder time telling you about all the different variations or even a engine and an 86 or the models. I think when you start to get into the weeds on it, you might lose people. The 86 feels like it's important to the thing that we care about, which is drifting and other, like, you know, it has other racing pedigree and that's cool, but I don't think it's number one. I do agree that it should be higher to the list. Culture impact. Obviously, it's in animes. People are aware of it, but not to the same level of like, you know, bottom line, nobody drove that car in a Fast and the Furious movie, you know? And as much as I don't much care for those movies, that's kind of a point. An LFA is in a Fast and the Furious movie. The Supra is a hero car in a Fast and the Furious movie. I think there's more video games that had the Supra in it than the 86.
I don't know about the video game part, but the other parts.
Need for Speed, initially, all that shit, like, would run the Supra, and 86 wasn't around as much.
When I think about the significance of like the Jay-Z engine and stuff, the A80 does climb a couple ranks in my book, almost. Mm-hmm. It depends on kind of like the perspective of what we're looking at as far as top 10 for, you know, what it is.
Like, people who don't even know anything about import cars know Supra.
They'd be a Supra,
you know what I mean? Like, Supra was the first car that, like, got respect from, like, the hot rod community, too. You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, like, maybe the Supra put Toyota more on the map than a lot of those other cars.
You know?
They wouldn't even know what an LFA or an 86 or a fucking...
And then you were also like, oh, you know, like, it's not as, like, cool as any GTR or whatever, but it's like, you could buy that car in North America. So, like, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, however many years ago that is now, like, if you were a pimp guy, you could have a Supra. You know,
mm-hmm.
I remember talking about that with you where it was like, yo, you know, I had my X7 Cressida, it had the non-VVTi 1J, it had, you know, SSR, Vienna Courage, and it had all this stuff and I'd built it. And we were like, you could have built this car 4 years after it was brand new, you know, like this motor came out, these wheels existed, this car existed.
Yeah.
You could have put this car together in 1990. And like, how crazy would that have been, you know, like.
That would have been insane.
Yeah, exactly. And like, same thing. It's like, you could have had a crazy Supra in 1990.
Yeah. Like,
that's pretty nuts. Okay.
It was in a lot of magazines, like, growing up when I started, like, even like non-car magazines, there was ads for Supras, like, to buy Supras and stuff. Like, that was one of the first cars that I was like, whoa.
Also, the sort of like fallout of the Supra is extremely significant because, like, it infiltrated Nissans. It infiltrated so many other cars because of the 2JZ. It's like, maybe the Supra itself wasn't significant, but like the remnants of the Supra, like the V160, not that it was super attainable, it's still sort of regarded as this like holy grail of transmissions. You know what I mean? And like the rear end and like, you know, I think the Supra was like probably the fastest import. Fucking in, so it probably broke so many records, more than any Skyline, you know what I mean, like as far as drag racing anyways, like and that sort of thing. And 2JZs to this day are like highly regarded as the engine, and that is directly related to the Supra. So yeah, I take my words back where I said like the A80 could not surpass that to 2000. And I think it definitely could and should.
All right. How about we pencil in, I love that we did this backwards, the Supra at number one. And if we can argue that something dethrones it along the way, we can dethrone it. So number one, Kevin?
I don't know. I still think the AE over the Supra myself.
But why? Why? Because... Oh, yeah, you give your AE argument, I'll give my AE argument.
I feel like, the A86, because it was more obtainable, more people got to experience it. I feel like it was built to be, you know, still very simple and easy to work on and easy to maintain for a lot of people. There was full out, like, race series just for that, multiple race series like N1 racing, N2 racing, like people slalom that car, people put the Supra Jay-Z in it, they drag race that car to this day, rally race that car. There's like almost nothing that car hasn't done. It's whatever it is, 50 years old now, it's still prolific, they're still developing new parts for it. They're remanufacturing the chassis. You know what I mean? Like to me, it's one of like, it's part of the Corolla heritage, which is like the world's best selling car. Like there's four cars in the world that are considered the best selling car ever. One is the Volkswagen Beetle. The other is the Lada. The other is the
Lada.
Yeah. It's just called like the Lada. I guess it's.
But that's probably because there's so many people and they sold so
many. Well, also, I think they're just still making the same fucking Lada that they made in the 1950s, like today. And yeah, the other one is the Model T and then the Toyota Corolla. It's like there's so many Corollas sold and this just happens to be part of them. But yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, the car's just a special car, you know?
You're making a case for the people's car, and I appreciate that.
The Japanese people's car.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think a huge part of the weight that the A86 holds for me is the fact that it's basically the Toyota version of like the Z, like in that sort of era, like the S30Z or like the Z sort of lineage was gained popularity because people could own it. Like, you know, S2000 Supra, all these cars that are like, you know, the Supra was on every kid's wall, but every kid could have a fucking Corolla or every kid could have a Z, you know what I mean? So like the A86 was sort of like that car where it's like, it was super attainable. It was cool enough. It was really simple. It was relatively cheap and it was just unbelievably fun. You know what I mean? Like it didn't need to have 500 horse. It didn't need to have, you know, like all these turbos and wastegates and fucking computers and all this shit. It's like, you literally just like chuck some wheels and suspension on it and go have a blast. You know what I mean? And like, it was not pretentious. It was not, I mean, I'm sure in some circles it eventually got there, but it wasn't like a pretentious car. It was just like a simple all around super dope car. And then to Kevin's, to sort of further, yeah, it was in like so many video games, so many race series, so many that. And that's one of the things that Toyota didn't really do was race fucking cars. So like the fact that the A86 was in many races and series and all this stuff, that sort of like holds a bit of weight.
I agree with all of that stuff. I just think that maybe that becomes more of like, that's the motorsports, like the importance of motorsports and not necessarily like all around kind of, you know, like it is.
All right. Well, let's pencil it in the 2 to 4 range in there, Ryan.
Okay.
All but right. Like, and that made, you know, what your point just made me want to bring up another point though. And it would be like the only reason I'm giving that Celica GT4 a spot up there is because of motorsports pedigree, almost. You know what I mean? So if you want to say that that's not really a part of it, then we should maybe talk about that car.
We can. And if we want, it can be a part of it, but I think there's a scale to it, right? Like there is the importance. And on the 86, when I wrote it down, I did write down a lot of that stuff. But I just think like the overall market saturation of the 86, like Corolla itself as a brand, I get, like as a model from beginning to end to where we are today is a thing. But I think what we're doing and how we're discussing it, the 86 still would, the average enthusiast would have a greater understanding and probably softer spot or more love for the Supra than an 86, I think.
I will say this. In the car community culture, I feel if you're like, I have a Corolla, people assume you have an 86. It's just like that. You just go straight to that. Like, what else would you have? You know what I mean?
Let's say I have an 86.
But also, like, if you said you had a Supra, it leaves it open. You know, you're like, I don't know. Well, you know, like, what do you
only
know?
Until recently, though, right? Like, but there used to be a point where it'd be like, I have a Supra, and people would be like, yo. And like, when someone says I have a Supra, I think also the reaction that you get from having a Supra is maybe a little bit different than having an 86. You know, I don't know, where people are
like a goal car, whereas an 86 is kind of like a cult classic.
I commend the everyman aspect that you're arguing, Kevin. I will pencil it in. All right. So we'll say one or two for a Supra. Supra 86, somewhere in there. Okay. Number three then. Where do we go? What's number three?
So it's going to be 2000 GT or LFA.
We should be men of culture and say the 2000 GT just to be men of culture. But
I mean, if you want to, I'm okay with that. It's a beautiful looking car. And like, yeah, and you know, as much as I like the LFA, Gerard's point about like, yeah, it's, what do you think 0-60 is, Gerard?
4 seconds, 4.5.
3.6, but.
That's fast. That's really fast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's not Taycan fast, buddy.
I mean, the Taycan's something else. But they said it wasn't about the ultimate speed. It was like supposed to be this emotion and stuff.
Yeah,
but the whole fucking problem with that is who the fuck gets to feel that emotion besides like 10 people in the world or like 30 people in the world? You know what I mean? And I get it. It was the culmination of every technological advancement and hand built this and that. And that's cool and that's special. But like, special to who?
But I think it also, like, you know, it's one of those engineering learning exercises where they built that and that allowed them to, you know, maybe make like the LC500 like a certain way, or you know what I mean? And it's like, if they hadn't have built that, then it would have been.
Well, that's kind of what I mean why those two cars are like equivalent in my books, the 2000 GT and the LFA. It's like they've carved the road. And they paved the road and the, you know, advanced technology and all that other stuff, but they're insignificant to normal people.
It's a halo car is what it is. You know, like that's exactly what it is. The car out of the gate was $350,000 USD. And for what it was putting up for numbers, when it came out, I don't think it was comparable to what you could get from other cars.
Yeah. They also said they like lost money on everyone they made.
Yeah. So like, kudos to them for doing it. It is a beautiful car. When I put it on the list, I had it at number two, but I had it at number two because I was like, if you gave me the choice between a Supra and an LFA, I'm taking the LFA. Like, that was kind of like it was just a dumb argument, but
my reason to put the LFA higher than the 2000 GT is because Gerard sort of said, like, if you're talking about our culture, it's like, I feel like it's the last 20 years or so. And like the LFA had cultural significance in the last 20 years. You know, for a time there, it was like the fastest car around the Nürburgring. It was like the car that was like in the news all the time. You know what I mean? It was like, it was significant. It's like in the Gran Turismo. It's, you know, like, I feel like, yeah, like Gerard also said, like the 2000 GT, it's like, it's a car nerds know about or Toyota nerds know about. It's not a car that anybody knows about. Like Paris Hilton has an LFA, you know what I mean? Like,
so now it goes down
the down no,
down.
What I want to say is Toyota came out with the 2000 GT and it looks amazing, and like if you were, you know, around in those times, you would think, oh my god, this Toyota brand, like, look at this beautiful car. What the fuck happened after that? Like, what, they're just like, let's just make a bunch of shitty looking crowns and stuff. Like, why didn't they just continue along this?
Because they know, like, they know their lane. They know what they can do and they know how to do it well. And they know they can make money.
Yeah, I think those are like niche markets.
Yeah. Like, look at how Mazda didn't do super, you know, that Mazda stayed in that lane and they just did that. They're like, we're going to make niche like sports cars, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, like, Toyota always had a halo car. So, like, why didn't their halo cars continue along this, like, beautiful car trajectory? You know what I mean? Like, what was the car that came out? Like, the Celica Supra?
But I mean, like, that's the thing. What's the stopgap between the 2000 GT and the LFA? It's like, they didn't always have a halo car. They never, ever had a halo car.
But I mean, like, yeah, like, why? Yeah, so the Celica. I mean, the Celica sort of looks 2000 GT-esque. Mm-hmm. Right, like the original, like
yeah.
That's a beautiful car,
lovely.
But like, and then yeah, I guess that's kind of how it went. But yeah, it's weird why the Celica was never on any of our lists, or like, you know what I mean.
I mean, I did think about that, the like 72, like I did as well
because the S30Z would be the equivalent car, and that continued along that, like. You know, but the Celica just was like, well, they had one or two good ones, and then the rest were kind of shit, and then they brought up the Supra thing. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and then I also thought that generation was maybe just like, I'm glad he doesn't listen to the podcast. No, I was going to say, like, people that have that car now are just like a variation of 86 guys, kind of. Like, if you have that Celica now, if you have the old 71.
If you have the same sort of powertrain.
Yeah.
It's like, why not wrap it in the sexiest body? Like, you know, I mean, like, A86 is cool and everything, but like, realistically, what's a more beautiful car? The fucking Celica is much more beautiful.
Okay, well, now I wish Matt Panic listened to the podcast.
Maybe he does. But I mean, like, it is. It's curvy. It's beautiful. Like, I've had, like, that car, and there are so many cool things about it. Like, how the windows roll down. There's no fucking B-pillar. Like, it's just such a cool-ass car. But then it just died. So, like, it lost any significance because it didn't continue on.
I think they're about to release another one.
But, I mean, so fucking what? Like, you know what I mean? It's just, it's, like, the
super. I mean, I don't know. Like, what today, if it was, like, a two-door V6? Like, I don't know. Maybe, what if it was, like, a TR?
But we already have that. We have the GR. Like, what's the Celica going to be different? You know, they butchered the Celica name so much that they're going to try to bring back some sort of semblance of the old Celica.
It's no, like, they'll just, I think they would keep going with a front wheel drive.
That's what I'm saying. It'd be like a, yeah, it'd be like, so a, like, I don't know. It would be like a two-door Camry. That could be kind of cool.
Would you ever buy it?
I mean, me? No.
Exactly.
Like, so what are we doing here?
Well, I mean, someone right. might. I mean, it'd be cool. It'd be cool if they made it. Then I could have the option to buy it. Right now, I don't even have the option to say no.
Yeah. It's like so cool, but like I don't give a shit.
Yeah, but it's front wheel drive. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Hang on. So for number three, are we going to put the 2000 GT or the LFA?
I'm going to put the LFA, man.
Okay.
I'm going to put the LFA.
I can abide. Personally. That's fine. All right. Number four. What are we doing for number four? The 2000 GT.
I feel like there should be.
That was an easy one.
Yeah.
You think that should be further down?
No, I was going to say there maybe should be a space between the LFA and the 2000 GT as they're so similar.
I did think that too. Yeah, okay.
But
that's bold. Okay. All right.
The 2000 GT's interior is really cool.
It's a cool car. It's just,
it is a cool car.
And it's just a thing that nobody can have. It's almost like.
Like, literally nobody can have because they sell for millions of dollars now.
All right. So we're not putting that at number four. What do you want to put at number four?
I mean, I would put it.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm glad that we got it because I don't want to push it any further down. So that's
I mean, yeah, I would have put it further down originally, but, like, you know, the whole talking about it, so.
Okay. Well, that's good. Look at us coming together as a people. We're like the people's car in the 86. Anyway, okay. Okay, number five.
Number five.
Is the 886 still on this list?
86 is either two or one, so I have it at two.
Okay.
I would almost say the UCF10 LS400 here.
That's what I was going to say.
Because that was the first Lexus car in North America. It was built to such a high standard.
Yeah.
Set the bar. That, like, was also, like, the first vehicle with the 1UZ.
So it can be used in a plane, a boat, and a car.
Exactly. You heard it here first. Some other time. Yeah. That was basically also when they were like, oh, Japan's not fucking around. It's like, oh, these European cars, oh, they have Japanese competition. And then, like, with the NSX, it's like, oh, these mid-engine supercars, oh, they have competition. Like, it wasn't exciting. It was an exciting time to be a fan of Japanese cars. Yeah.
And I think too, like in that era, like, people that were smart, I mean, to this day, people that are smart, they buy Lexuses.
Mm-hmm.
The people that want to flex or show off, they don't buy Lexuses. They'll buy a non-Lexus. You know, they'll buy a Beamer. They'll buy a Benz. They'll buy a
QX80.
Cars. Yeah. those aren't better cars. They're just more exciting and look better and all this stuff. But if you're really smart and you really care about money and, like, not spending it, you buy a Lexus. And, like, I think, you know, you eventually realize that, yeah, that all that other stuff is sort of less significant after 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, that somehow this Lexus that costs less is still amazing. Everything still works. The leather's still good. You know, like, everything about it's still amazing. And all these other cars are basically just, like, worth absolutely nothing and, you know, barely even running. And cost you the price of the car to maintain. So it's like, that's a significant impact. So
Also, I think it's very important to say that it is now, that car is super affordable, which means it's like an entry level to the Lexus brand and perfect for high schoolers that sell drugs.
Yeah. Or weld the diff and go takeovers.
Yeah. Well, that's what you do after you sell the drugs. You go to the takeover. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. I think that works perfect for five. Number six.
It's also a great vehicle because Serial 9 has a whole catalog of parts for that car. So if you want to dump it on its guts and get some UFO-style camber, we can help you out with that.
I mean, that's a good point because culturally, like within our circle, like the UCF is almost like the Camry of VIP cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And probably not because it's like what you think it is, but it's probably because like it's easily attainable and it runs and like everything works. So like you buy this car for not a lot of money and then you basically fuck it up and like make it drag on the ground or put all these stupid camber parts on it and like big wheels and all this shit. And it somehow just is still a nice fucking car.
There's probably way more 1996 LS400s rolling around than there are 1996 BMW 5 Series rolling around still. You know what I mean? Or any Nissan sedan. Like, I feel like the Nissan sedans just didn't sell in the numbers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, if you wanted to build a VIP car in North America, you're probably either doing it to an LS or a GS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless you're willing to sort of like really step out of the box.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's a possibility now, but I mean, I don't know, like 10 years ago, like, you know, the States, they didn't have a lot of options.
But that's kind of, well, that's also kind of what I mean. It's like, it's almost like the AE86 of stance cars. Like, you know what I mean? Like if
I love the analogies are just compared to other Toyotas. It's a Camry of,
but like you, if you have like a VIP, like
it's UCF, the jet ski of snow shows.
I'm gonna say 20. If you have a, you know, like it's not, it's, and the car is already super old. Like maybe if you have a 10, it's a little bit harder to like, you know, whatever. But like, if your buddy has a new Beamer that's stanced out, and you have like a UCF 20 that's stanced out, and like, you know, like done really nice. It's not like that car's viewed as like so shitty.
Yeah, vastly inferior.
It's still held in a fairly high regard for what it is, like an old car.
Hey, before I say my other thought, what is the most popular part you sell for that car?
For a long time, it was the front uppers or.
And the rear upper.
Yeah, basically anything to give it camber.
Anything to dump it on its guts and make it look dope? Is that what we're saying? Yeah, good. You heard it here first. Dump it on its guts, make it look dope. I will say, in researching this whole list, and the one car that I thought we were going to have an argument about was the Cressida. But I think the LS400 may have actually killed the Cressida in North America. Hear me out, because it was rear-wheel drive, right? And that when you look into it, they're like, what replaced the Cressida? People say the Avalon replaced the Cressida, because it was like, it goes Camry, Cressida. Cressida was meant to be like the high-end Toyota, but when they released the LS, they were like, we don't really need the high-end Toyota, it doesn't make sense. So they put it into the LS.
I agree with that 100%. The LS superseded the Cressida.
Wild. I learned something.
The only way the Cressida could have continued on, I feel like, is if it...
As if they brought their actual correct one.
Yeah, like the 90 came over with the 1J in left-hand drive as like the sporting Toyota sedan.
Like if that car was competing with 5 Series, I guess, was it 5 Series would be, or 3 Series?
I think that was more like the 3 Series, but then I think the IS300 was competing with the 3 Series, but like...
But I mean, at that time, in the 1990?
Imagine if the IS300 had the one, like, came over with the 1J.
I don't think it would have worked.
I don't think so, eh?
Personally. Nah, it's too small of a car. It's not like a... Especially because it was a Lexus. It was always viewed as like the baby Lexus.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you were like a man and you had like money and shit, you weren't buying a fucking IS300, because that's like a peasant car. That's like if you were like a, really like this. if you were like a real... No, I mean, when they came out.
Yeah.
When they came out, it was like, you know, like...
They were... No one's buying... I don't... Yeah, not a lot of...
Girls would buy those. Or like if you were like a... I don't know, like a...
It's like if you want to...
Young entrepreneur.
If you were like a grandfather and wanted to golf, but you were like a younger grandfather, you might buy the IS. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it was marketed to younger people. I just don't really know who would buy it.
I think it was too, but like no one had that money. That's what I mean. Like the younger people couldn't afford that.
No. It was like young professionals. Like that's why it was sort of aimed at the 3 Series, but I think they missed the mark because like the 3 Series is the smaller of the Beamers. So like if you were like a, I don't know, like an ad, like a starting ad executive and you were making a bit of money, you know, but not like 5 Series money, you would get an IS300 or a 3 Series. But the thing is, so the IS300 was like Lexus, but sort of sporting. But then where do you go from there? I guess the GS? The GS was the 5 Series? Yeah, I guess so. The GS was pretty...
And then the LS is the 7 Series, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked the IS when it came out. But, I mean, what... Around that time, Civics weren't maybe as nice as or as cool as they were before.
I remember being impressed with that car when it came out. You were like, oh, yeah, this is cool. It's like inline 6, manual, rear-wheel drive, like... It's a sedan.
It's got
like,
clear taillights.
It's got clear taillights. And that, you know, that started a whole industry in its own right, just on those taillights.
That should almost be on the list just because of the taillights.
Yeah. That was like that's an industry killer right there, man. Like the taillights of your car became synonymous with an entire style. Like they're just called Alteza tails. You know what I mean? Like no matter what they're on. Right.
Nobody even knew what an Alteza was.
You could have a Silverado and you have Alteza tails, you know?
Yeah, and you're right, Gerard. At that point, nobody really knew what it was.
Yeah, they just thought that that's what they were called, like some stupid-ass name, you know?
It would be interesting to be, like, in the boardroom when Toyota was making these decisions, because you're right. It's like they could have continued, why not send the 90 over? But somebody made that decision. We're like, no, not a chance. Americans don't want this, you know, like they don't want this car.
I mean, there's probably never any tooling to make that car in left-hand drive, you know.
They make choices.
I mean, honestly though, like, man, it'd be so cool to somehow like play that out if the 90 came over as a 5 Series competitor.
But that's the thing, it's not, because it's like it's too sporting. Like,
but there's the M5, man, and it's not sporting because it's automatic. And it's, you know, like, it's supposed to be kind of a bit of, like, a sport luxury car.
Not the one I'm bringing over. not the one I'm walking into my Toyota dealership when I'm 4 years old and buying.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, it would have been crazy because, like, truthfully, those cars are nuts. Like, the JZX90 is fucking nuts.
The JZX90, to me, is the closest Toyota ever got to making a Nissan.
Yeah. It's like actually when you press the gas, you're just like, holy fuck, like what is this? This engine is insane. And like I've never felt that in another car. Like, you know, like I mean, I haven't driven like an M5, but I've been in like M3s and stuff, and like, you know, being NA and like winding out, like it's not the same thing. You don't have that like instant like kick your ass torque, like I'm gonna lose traction when you're not paying attention. You better fucking hold on. Like it's none of those cars have that. And the fact that you would do 4 mods and the thing's making 300 at the wheels, but like tons of, like, it's crazy, you know? So that car would have been really cool to see.
So brought it over. Here's a question then. Is that car number 6? It's maybe number 6 is a JZX, but we got to choose one. Is it a 90? Is it a 100?
I'm going to say the 100, 100%.
I'd say the 100 probably has, yeah, is more culturally significant. And like widely spread and
now which
recognizable chaser. I would even go as far as to say JZX 100
they're all the chaser.
Yeah.
90, 100, Cresta, Mark II, they're all a chaser. They're just chaser.
You know what's cool? You know what's really, really makes me happy lately though? Is the amount of Crestas that are being built in Japan. I think it's probably because all the other cars are gone. Yeah. But like it's cool now that like that the Cresta is rising in its like you know, it was kind of always like the cool one or whatever.
Crystal Rising. That sounds like a sick movie. That can be the movie that that shows during the preview for Toto's Mile.
But also now, because of the Japanese rise of the Cresta, like people in North America are like, yeah, Cresta's sick. Cresta's the best. Cresta's fuck chasers, you know? And it's like, yeah, fuck chasers, right? Like,
I have the unpopular opinion that I think Mark II's are my, I like those ones the best. But that, it is what it is. I'm not saying to put it on
a lot of
the
people
list.
Are right there with you, man. A lot of people are right there with you. But for me, the Mark II is the worst one in the 100.
I agree that the Chaser is the one that belongs on the list. I think it's because the Mark II
is the Mark II 90 the most. I like the Chaser 100.
I think the Mark II 90 is the most recognizable and iconic 90. Whereas the Chaser 100 is the most recognizable and iconic 100.
Yeah.
Because, like, so many people wouldn't even be able to fucking tell you what a 90 Chaser or Cresta looked like.
We all agree with it, but let's give a reason why the JZX 100 Chaser is number 6 on the list.
It's a sedan.
You are the kings.
It's sick. for the JZ engine, one. Right? So that's like almost the same sort of...
It's a Toyota car you can buy manual.
That's rear-wheel drive. And comes with a turbo and an inline six.
It's just like a... It's a crazy car, man.
It also feels like the... From the factory, like the most... Like, hoon car.
Yeah.
Like you know what I mean? Like, the car that they wanted you to go do this stuff with. Like, we're building the Cressidas, we're manual swapping crowns. Toyota was like, no, this is the one. If you're going to do it, just do it with this one, you know? And that feels like not a Toyota thing to do, really, you know?
Yeah, like, you could take a 90 or 100, but we're talking about 100s. You could take a 100 that was manual and actually go and, like, just do shit with it. There was no other Toyota. I mean, obviously, like, earlier you could, you know, but, like, on the level of that era. Like in the, you know, it's well into the 90s at that point. All cars had basically 250 or more horsepower. And this car had 300 foot-pounds of torque at like 2000 RPM, you know? So like, yeah, you could just go buy one and go and do shit. But I think for me, it's like the culturally, like it popularized sedans. It sort of like made them okay. You know what I mean? Like drift cars, I wouldn't say prior to that, but like before the recognition of the JZXs as a drift car, like before North America finally figured out what the fuck they were or like that they existed, it was all just like S chassis,
RX7, the Corolla,
A6. Yeah.
Maybe an R32.
Maybe a couple of other Nissan.
But then, once the JZX came into fruition, it was sort of like, oh, that opened up.
Yeah.
Because before it was like, oh, if you have a 4-door car, it was like you had a VIP car. But now it was like, you could have a drift car, maybe, you know?
And I mean, even us, when we had our, like, when I had the Cressida and Kevin had the Cressida, like, we would show up there, we would literally be the only two fucking sedans at any
time. Out of like 50 cars. Yeah.
Yeah,
go and there's probably more sedans than not, with the amount of BMWs and Volvos and
and that was the thing is like it made 4-doors cool, it made 4-doors okay, and it made 4-doors not only okay but cool, you know. So I think that's
a very fair point. Everyone has that story when you listen to people, they're like, and then I started watching all these option videos on VHS and I put it in and this 4-door car showed up and it was a Chaser and I realized I can't have that. But man, I love, you know, like everyone has that realization of seeing this car. And to further go with the point that you made, you don't really see a lot of R32 like 4-doors. Like, I don't feel like those had the same like kind of. They didn't hit the same. They didn't do this. They didn't do the business that the JZX 100 did.
And I think as far as like the drifting community and the whole drifting, like, what's the word? Like the history of drifting and like the, I don't know, like the progression of drifting. Like those cars are solidly ingrained in drifting. You know what I mean? Like, probably more so than an R32. You know what I mean? Like it goes like S chassis, JZX, and then, you know, like, maybe not, but I'm just saying, like, the JZX is fucking top three.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I would agree.
For, with like, that. Significance of the, you know.
It's like 8.6.
Yeah, it's like S chassis. 8.6 and S chassis are like tier one. And then, yeah.
Well, I think the 8.6 sort of lost out, like, in staying power.
Like, yeah, I think it, for sure.
Yeah, like, because you kind of capped out with an 8.6, right? Whereas, like, with the S chassis, they had all the body mods. They came out with three other ones. So, like, not only, you know, like, there was no more AE86 after the AE86.
Well, also, it felt like the starting point of a 5-lug SR turbo car is going to get you 12 years down the road. You know what I mean? Like, you can't keep doing that with your Corolla, almost, you know?
Yeah, I think I know.
Like, basically, if you had a 5-lug SR20 car, like, you could mod it for a long time and get it to the point where now you have huge wheels and wide body and, like, a bigger turbo and all this stuff. But it's like the Corolla, like, you're going to reach something where you just can't keep going, you know?
Yeah. The ceiling is a lot lower on an 8.6.
It's weird, though, because it feels like there's, like, just two ceilings. There's, like, a realistic ceiling, but, like, also there is, like, a... I swear the ceiling on a Corolla is higher.
Because you'd have to basically build an entire goddamn car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, here's an important thing. You guys also sell parts for JZX100s. What's the most popular part you sell for that?
Diff bushings. Like, throughout the history of the company, diff bushings. Recently, though, I would say the AK49 has been extremely popular. And then even more recently is our adjustable tension rod. Very well received as well. But, man, we sold so many diff bushings.
Number 7. What goes number 7 on the list?
Camry? Okay, what's higher in your books, Camry or Prius? I'm going to say Camry, 100%.
I'd say Camry as well.
Actually, I might say Prius.
I mean... Overall impact, I will say probably Prius because it had. Yeah.
I mean, Prius isn't like the number one selling car for 25 years.
No.
You're not wrong. But I think what my thing would be is that is a consistently good version of something that has existed. Whereas the Prius cultural impact and like. It like changed the way the market functioned and the way people did things. So the Prius, just for the fact that it innovated instead of like perfected.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with those statements.
Jerry, number 7 is a Prius. Speak now or forever hold your Prius. And number 8 is a Camry. Do you have a specific one that you would choose?
Is like the 97. I do think that one like looks a bit better.
Yeah, still it's very reliable. Engine. Yeah.
Although there was the MZ and the VZ. Man, those motherfuckers are fast.
Dude, and they sound sick.
200 horsepower. And it's like, it's not like 200 horsepower that like.
You really got to ring it out. Yeah, it's like 200 horsepower always.
Yeah, you could just be like talking on the phone, rolling a cigarette, just eating McDonald's and floor it. And like, you know, the thing would just be at 170K in like, you know, it's so crazy. Like it's like a mindless, amazing car.
Yeah. It's the secret weapon.
And yeah, it's the secret weapon. And also like, because of the Camry, like you could literally drive like a complete idiot super fast. And never get pulled over.
You hear that, kids? Buy a Camry and drive like an idiot.
You know, if you're getting hassled, you're not enjoying it.
Exactly. It's not very enjoyable to have to argue with or convince a cop to let you go. You know what I mean?
Like, we're at number 9.
Oh, wow. What are our choices for 9?
Yeah, I feel like I'm running low here.
Well, we can go over a few things. I put ISF on the list. I have my reasons. I put, again, Yamaha collaboration. A great modern example of what Lexus / Toyota building something that can perform, compete with German cars. And especially at a time when there's so many boring Japanese cars, the ISF kind of isn't necessarily that. And then I also said in episode 101, we called it a modern classic. So maybe it has, you know, it kind of, it takes very little from the LFA, but it has taken things from the LFA. So the trickle down effect.
It's got a soul score of 7.
Ooh, the soul score.
I don't know what this
is. Is that done by Kia?
The Lexus. No, it says machines. Machines with souls. Lexus ISF is an odd sports sedan. What was Toyota thinking when it made the ISF? Strange looks, peaky V8, and other oddities help set it apart in good and bad ways.
Strange looks? Is it strange looking?
I don't particularly like the looks of them.
It's a little like hunchy or something, you know what I mean? It looks like...
Just that generation of car.
The rear fitment on them always looks a bit
too low.
What about the Toyota Mirai?
That's the one that nobody knows what it is.
It's the world's first hydrogen powered car.
Cool.
That's revolutionary.
That's like having a record for how many fucking frisbees you can balance on your tippy toes on your, you know what I mean?
Oh, like, man, someone's got that. They're in the book. You're not. Nobody you're cares. Not in the book.
You're right.
I appreciate the push for it, but I do wonder. Like, it is an interesting concept.
I'm on my thing. I'm on my thing of weird cars. So
we could still do like the BRZ FRS GRA.
Oh, sorry, we're at number 9.
Yeah, number 9.
Yeah, originally this is where I thought the Cressida was going to go, and then we were going to have an argument because serial 9. Anyway.
Neither of you guys are going to vote for the A90 Supra, hey? Obviously not.
I don't hate that vote.
I mean, I think it should be on the list, maybe, I don't know, 9 or 10, you know?
I could go for that.
I don't know that car, to me, does more than the GT86.
And especially because it's a diluted Toyota. It's not like
Toyota. It feels like the GT86 was like a whole like reimagining, reinvigoration of, supposed to be a different brand, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And the Yaris or the GR Corolla kind of also is that idea of like Toyota being like, whoa, 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 we're not fully done on like trying to be kind of exciting. There is that sense of like, we'll still build exciting cars. I do get what you mean with the Supra. It's like this new age of like Toyota being like, we're willing to still build cool stuff. But in a way, they're also being like, but not on our own. Like,
we'll always have to do it with someone else. But that's just Toyota, man. That's how Toyota works. Like, if you want to say that, then so is the GT86 built with Subaru, you know?
And that's kind of what I mean. It's like both of those cars are sort of a diluted Toyota. So that's kind of why...
The Supra is at least an obtainable car.
And also the Supra is, it is a Supra. Whereas like the 86 has a Subaru equivalent. So that sort of makes it less significant.
But the Supra has a Supra equivalent and it's the Z4.
It's not the same car though.
But that's like saying neither is the GT86. It has like styling differences. You know what I mean?
But I mean, if you look at a Z4 and you look at a Supra, they're vastly different cars. The interiors are different, the exterior is different, and it's like you probably couldn't even, nobody would even know what a Z4 actually looks like because they're so rare. Like, how many of those cars have you seen? I've seen like 5, maybe 10. Maybe
I'm never looking, that's why.
They're beautiful, like they're a fucking amazing looking car, but like, you know, the Supra is the one that holds the weight. The Supra is the one that, you know, carries the flame.
Has the Supra made a bigger impact so far than the new 86?
I think it depends on the circles you run in, right? Like, that car put the B58 on the map. It it regained its like drag racing Supra sort of like, or reignited its, you know, Supra drag racing heritage. It basically picked up where the old one left off and like fucked off with it. Like in the tuning circles, that car is like, when the Supra came out, man, it was huge, yeah. Right? The A90, like it was, everybody was, still people are modding the Supra, right? And it came out, what, like fucking four or 5 years ago?
But I feel like when the 86, GR 86, whatever came out, that was also huge. Like the dealership invited us to like drive it and write an article on it. And like, it was a whole, I just mean like they pushed with enthusiasts is what I'm trying to get at. Like,
I agree with that, but it's the same thing as the A86 where like the cap, it's capped. You know what I mean? And I mean, I get it. Like, you know, in the drift, you know, in the Formula D and all that stuff, it had its significance, but like those cars were essentially no longer 86s. It's like you took the shell of an FRS and all this shit and you put engine A or engine B or engine D or whatever the fuck in it. It's like, yeah, that's cool, but like, is it still, like, you're just basically taking like the image of this car, which I mean, it's still significant, but like with the Supra, they're taking everything that car is and making it something. Like most of the drag racing record holder Supras now are B58 cars, you know, the drift cars. I mean, some of them went back to 2JZs obviously, but now they're developing B58, you know, drift cars and stuff. So like, I swear the Supra did more for that engine.
Yeah. I do have to agree with Gerard there that like, if you're going for like a full out road race car, if you're going for a full out drag car, if you're going for a full out drift car and you're using the FRS, you're probably swapping everything. You're just using it as a chassis. Whereas, yeah, like if you're doing any of those things with the new Supra, you're probably using the entirety of the car and you're just modifying those components.
And also the Supra can run in those circles. The Supra can run in like the Porsche circles. It can run in the BMW circles and stuff. The 86, it's like, it runs in the circles of like autocross and like, you know, you can race it, but like you're not going very far unless you, like you said, Kevin said, like unless you completely change the whole
thing. And honestly, yeah, like you show up, you know, you show up to a lapping day and there's, you know, like R8s and Porsches and all this shit. And it's like, you show up with the FRS, like no one's looking at you twice, you know. You show up with the A90 Supra though, and like Gerard said, you're one of the boys, sort of, you know.
You know, and after the jokes of the BMW bullshitter aside, at the end of the day, you showed up in this Toyota Supra, right?
Look, I'm not married to either. To me, both signify kind of the same thing, which is a newer version of Toyota committing to try to make exciting cars. I think both of them have a cultural impact and are probably featured in things. So I'm cool with the Supra being number 9.
I was just going to say it is funny because it feels like the exact talk we just had about number 1 with the Supra and the 86.
Oh, you're right. That is it. Yeah.
It's the same cock about the same cars just 25 years later.
So then does it just go the Supra is number 9 and then the GT86 is number 10?
I mean, unless someone has a reason they want to put like the something else or the MR2 or whatever.
The only other thing that I would maybe dispute is the GR Corolla, but and like consider that. But there's been problems, I think, with that car. So it's fine. I wouldn't. And I don't think it carries over as much to different markets.
Unfortunately, with the GR Corolla and the GR Yaris, it was like they're unobtainium cars. It was like you put your deposit down and like whatever it was, like 2 years later, they're like, oh, you can get one in this color in like another year and a half. And it's like, well, I want a different color. And it's like, well, that's not available. Like either buy it or don't, you know? And it's like,
I mean, the other thing is it's a $70,000 Corolla. Like, get fucked for 70 grand. I'm not buying a Corolla.
Yeah, you could buy an LC500.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's on my list, but yeah, it's just like I have a whole list of like cars that like I think, but I'm like, there's no way that they would. So I would just wait till we're all done, and then I'll say my silly cars.
Okay. So the ISF, not on the list. We do the Supra. We do the GT or GR86.
Well, let's go from the beginning. Start at number one, and let's see if we're...
Let's run it, because I've been writing it down. Okay. Number one, the Supra. Yes, the one that when you close your eyes and picture a Supra, that's the one you see. Number two, the 86, the AE86. Number three, LFA. Number four, 2000 GT, which is just the old LFA. Five, LS400, UCF10. Just, again, to reiterate, cultural significance.
Okay. So you think the LS400 is higher than the JZX?
Yes.
Because of the world. Okay, yeah. Because
and also, like, it was the first car with that motor, the first car that Lexus introduced, like...
Okay.
But yeah, like, okay. In our world...
Yeah, in our world, in my world, the JZX is higher, but as far as
the world, perhaps, yeah.
Yeah, I think it helped shift the trajectory of Toyota as a global brand.
And without the LS400, we may not have a bunch of other things.
Exactly. Without the LS400, I might not have my car. Anyway, okay. Number six, JZX100. We chose the Chaser. And then number seven, we chose the Prius. We didn't choose a generation of Prius.
It's going to be either yours or the next one, where it was the Prius V. When the Prius V came out, I think that was significant because not only was it a hybrid, like, crazy car, it was huge inside. Like, the Prius V was, like, massive inside. And that's why they were
all cabs. Is it not the one generation prior to Ryan's, though, isn't it?
No, it's one after.
Oh, is it?
It's the next one after.
I think after. Because they do the Prius C and the Prius V and then the Prius.
Because even yours is relatively big. You know what I mean? Like, yours could be a cab.
But then the one before mine, I think, was the one that was like all the celebrities bought when it came out. And that was kind of like, you know, like the ugly one. But like DiCaprio and Pitt and all them were like driving it around. Yeah. Like, okay, so we'll say either the first gen or the second gen Prius. I don't really think it matters. And realistically, if I were to choose to have any Prius, it'd be the brand new Prius. Anyway, okay. Number eight, the Camry.
I mean, honestly, should the Camry really beat out like the GR, the GR86, the FRS and the A90 Supra?
Oh, should it? Oh. I mean, I originally had it at 10.
Yeah,
because it's not like
it's significant.
It's your bank account. It's your bushings. Is what you know. It's like your diff bushings, the thing that you sell a lot of. You know, it's
like the gasoline that like all the other cars need to be on the list.
Exactly.
All right, I'm fine with putting it down. Yeah.
Camry 10. 8 is A90 Supra. 9 is FRS. 10 is Camry.
So there you have it. That is a top 10 list of the best Toyota cars, automobiles, not trucks or SUVs, of all time. And I think that was pretty good, you guys. I'm surprised how we got through that without arguing with each other. We were pretty civilized about it, which was interesting. I honestly thought I like took a screen cap of a meme that Kevin posted today because I thought I was going to have to argue in favor of the use of the 10, you know? Like,
well, it's
like,
funny because I posted that meme and then somebody was like, oh, that, but it should be the facelift UCF 20. And then I was like, okay, I agree with you, but, and then I made a reason why like the UCF 10 was more like influential or significant. But I'm like, I like the 20 more, but like, I, you know. All right, so I'm going to give you some other hilarious Toyota cars. And we already said the Serra, basically a Paseo, gull wing doors. Like, you want to get to work fuel efficiently, but feel like $1 million. There you go, you know, Toyota Serra. What about the Previa? or the first gen Sienna. The first gen Sienna was like pretty ground shaking when it came over here too. But yeah, Previa. Previa is like, I remember like my neighbors had a Previa and just being like, what the hell is this thing? Like who made this? Like this exists? Like you could just buy this and drive this? This is what cars are going to be like in the future? Have you heard of the Toyota Will VI? Look it up. We'll show it on the screen now. It's so crazy. It's like the back window scoops inwards. It's like if a kid drew a car and then they made it into a car. It was in partnership with Panasonic, I believe. I know you guys have known about this one because I talk about it all the time. The Toyota Origin. Yeah, it's basically the underpinnings of a JZX. It has a 2JNA. It has a curved rear window, has suicide doors in the rear. It looks like a 1950s car, but they made 100 of them, I think. And then, yeah, there's another crazy Toyota called the Toyota Classic. And once again, like the Origin, it's like, looks like a 1930s car, but it was made in 1996. These cars are bonkers.
So what would be, let's do 3 or 5 honorable mentions.
Okay, honorable mention. What would you say?
Yeah, I think the MR2. Yeah.
For sure.
I think we booted the Celica GT4 right out of the thing, didn't we?
We did.
That's a cool car though, man.
Yeah.
Like the ST205 with the 4 headlights, I really like that car. That's like a pretty cool car.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm the Sentry, man. The Sentry's got to be.
Yeah, I feel like Sentry's got to have honorable mention. Like, it's a V12. Like,
okay. Yeah. Okay.
That in its own right is bonkers.
I don't want to say it again, but.
Okay, I mean, maybe we'll do 5 honorable mentions then, you know? The ISF could be on there for sure, for sure. Well, so we had ISF, MR2.
Sentry.
And we had the Celica.
Celica. Oh, like this early Celica?
Originally, like it started with the earlier one, but I don't know.
Does the ST05 hit harder on the parameters of what we were discussing?
Yeah, because it's an all-wheel drive car, turbocharged. Like, it was that. It was the competitor in that whole, like, rally,
yeah.
All-wheel drive.
And if that livery is iconic, you kind of like,
yes, was in the Castrol, games, yeah, 100%, 100%.
You know, it definitely checks a lot of boxes. Maybe the problem is that eventually that line just kind of went to shit.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah, they were just kind of like, hey, we built this car. And then you're like, yeah, that's super cool. And then they're like, you know what else is cool? What if we make it front wheel drive and you can get a bunch of TRD like aero.
But I mean, like every brand is doing that. They're like, oh yeah, like, oh, you want this sick muscle car? Yeah, no, now it's front wheel drive. Like, oh, you want, you know, like, oh, fucking sweet. This car that we made for 40 years that has like the only lineage of our brand. Let's make it into a crossover.
Yeah, let's just butcher that.
Let's wrap this up. What did we learn here today?
I think we learned that we're more similar than different. And I think that is a great thing today to be thinking about.
That was really succinct. Thanks, Kevin.
That was really what?
Succinct. Tara's got some great cars and it was interesting to discuss them.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I feel like we really knuckled down. We bared down and got to work and sorted it out. And yeah, what an enjoyable activity that was. All right. So thank you everyone who tuned in, whether if you listened to us on Spotify or watched our video on YouTube. I think you can actually watch the video on Spotify as well. So if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, any suggestions that you would like us to talk about, by all means, reach out to one of us on Instagram.
I'm Ryan_DotoLogic.
I am Kevin_Serial9.
And I am @Serial9 or Gerard_Serial9. Oh, sorry, Serial9_G. Sorry.
I don't know who I am.
What is life? Yeah, anyway, reach out to us. Let us know. We're always open to feedback. And yeah, thank you again so much for hanging out with us. Until next time. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.